A third widely held belief was that to achieve strategic success, an army should operate on interior lines, and that in fact, even tactically, interior lines would pay off. I used the example in the last lecture of the interior lines strategically that helped the Confederates in the campaign of First Manassas, where they hurried reinforcements from the lower Shenandoah Valley to the battlefield at Manassas along a direct rail route that the Union could not match. In a tactical sense, interior lines shown very effectively at Gettysburg for the Union Army under George Gordon Meade. The famous Union fishhook was about 2.5 miles from one end to the other. The Confederates were arrayed on a much larger fishhook outside the Union fishhook, which meant that Meade could shift troops from his right flank on Culp's Hill to positions on his left flank, the wheat field, for example, on the second day, much more rapidly than Lee could match that by shifting troops from his left or right to the other flank. So interior lines tactically were good, interior lines strategically were good. Soldiers on both sides agreed. The fact that they all accepted these basic things, the strength of the defense, the problematical nature of frontal assaults, the usefulness of interior lines, doesn't mean that they all could execute them equally well. That's where the ability of generals comes in. Some are simply better than others. And although most of the soldiers on both sides recognized these things were ideals to strive for, some proved to be much more adept at achieving them than did others. But a pretty much equal body of learning and experience underlay the thinking on both sides. Again, very similar situation, North and South. One more factor of command is worth mentioning, and that is the role of political generals on both sides. We should always remember that this is a case of two democratic societies at war. And it is imperative for the political leaders of those two societies to take into account public opinion and certain key constituencies. And that was the case in both sides. Abraham Lincoln appointed a number of German generals because the German element was so important in the North in keeping the war effort going. There were Irish generals. There were Democratic generals from Democratic areas. There were Republican generals from Republican areas. And Jefferson Davis did the same thing. He had to take care of some powerful political constituencies within the Confederacy as well. There are many famous political officers on both sides, not many talented ones, not many successful ones, but many famous ones. Benjamin Butler for the North, Nathaniel P. Banks for the North, Carl Schurz, one of the German generals from the North, Franz Sigel, another German general from the North. On the Southern side, you have such politicians as the two Georgians, Robert Toombs and Howell Cobb. My point is that these men were selected not because they were great officers, but because they served a particular constituency, and it was important to keep those constituencies tied to the war effort. Overall, and I may have belabored this too much, but I think it's important because the notion that the Confederacy had better generals is so widely held. The bottom line here is that both sides drew from quite comparable pools of potential military leadership. Let's move on to our second topic here, and that is the relative success of Jefferson Davis and Abraham Lincoln as war leaders. Now, it would seem at the outset that Lincoln would be much the less effective of the two. He had virtually no military experience. He'd been a company grade officer very briefly in the Black Hawk War back in the 1830s. But Lincoln was a very bright man. He applied himself diligently to gaining a better grasp of military affairs. He listened to his military advisors, Winfield Scott, George B. McClellan, and others. He read what they told him to read, and he very early on developed, I think, a quite sound strategic grasp of what it would take for Northern victory. He understood that it was imperative to apply pressure across the board against the Confederacy, so it would be difficult for the Confederates to match all these Union advances with the smaller pool of Confederate resources. He understood, did Lincoln, that it was important to target enemy armies rather than cities. Because if you defeated the armies, if you smashed the armies or bled the armies sufficiently, the Confederate resistance would wither. It was more important, Lincoln understood early in the war, to come to grips with Lee's Army of Northern Virginia and hurt it as much as possible, more important to do that than to try to get into Richmond without inflicting the greatest possible damage on the Army of Northern Virginia. A great strength of Lincoln's was that he saw these two key strategic imperatives for the North